This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. In recent years, our audience has often heard from Ben Lando, the Kalamazoo native, Western Michigan University graduate, and founder of the Iraq Oil Report. The online news service covers business, politics, security, and yes, energy and oil in Iraq. Ben Lando is back in Kalamazoo. Today, he's here with his colleague, Ali, who is the Baghdad bureau chief. Gentlemen, thank you very much for being here.
Thanks for having us.
And let's just note here that we are referring to Ali by simply the name Ali for purposes of security. So let's start off with the idea of security. Tell us, we've heard a lot about ISIS. How safe is it right now to be in Iraq?
Well, I think it really depends on where in Iraq you are. The safest places in Iraq are the furthest north and the furthest south, I think, is the general way to describe it. And that's where there's the least amount of presence of ISIS and also other terrorist outfits. There still is regular explosions in Baghdad and places immediately south of Baghdad, as well as this territory north and to the west of the country, basically about a third of the country. I would say that, speaking not as an Iraqi, that's the biggest threat right now, is just this essentially a war that's being carried out, a battle that's happening. But you know, Iraqi citizens face numerous other threats, a lack of services, maybe behind schedule development of the security forces, police.
Ali, you want to pick it up from there?
Well, I think that the main areas, there are five provinces in Iraq, the three western of Iraq provinces, which is Mosul, Salah al-Din, and Anbar province, and the other two, like Diyala in the east, and Kirkuk, which is, I mean, the Kurds are there and the Iraqi security forces, but it is still a threat is at the, what we say, at the doors, at there. So, I mean, in these provinces, but the risks are not just there of ISIS, because it's just spread over the other areas in the country for the plans they are doing, for they have like what we call them like sleeping cells in other parts, especially in Baghdad. Why? Because Baghdad is the capital. They would like to do as much as they can to draw the attention.
We've seen a lot about American journalists being targeted by ISIS and some of them being killed, beheaded. What is the danger for the average Iraqi citizen, if there is such a thing, when it comes to ISIS?
Well, in general, the Iraqis themselves are targeted because the ISIS main targets, you know, is to kill as much as from the civilians in general. It's not just the Westerns. So that's why we see the roadside bombs and the car bombs on the suicide car bombs. They are targeting the massive peoples near these recently by the Shiite mosque, especially during the last few weeks, because there is a Shiite ceremony. It's called Ashura and Muharram. About five or six Shiite mosques were targeted for both reasons, for, you know, massive people there at these areas and also on the markets and in the other areas. So, and I'm, I mean, as an Iraqi now, I could how to describe to you that is the first that we feel now is much, much more than when we, you know, the days of Qaeda in 2006 and 2007. So, because the targets are, you know, everywhere you could expect them, even in Baghdad, and even the south is relatively safe, but there are still bombs happen mm-hmm. in some areas, you know, car bombs happen. So, I mean, in their daily lives, the Iraqis, the threats are still standing.
Beyond, I think, just the sectarian issue, which is big and it's what drives them, but in their way of thinking, anyone who isn't part of and supporting the caliphate is a viable target. The rationale is just because they are, you know, acceptable collateral damage. And I think that's what poses a big risk. And beyond that, it also leads to increased sectarianism, because then there's a lot of people who would say, well, if you're going to join the caliphate, then you must be a Sunni. And so that means everyone who's a Sunni is a suspect. And that plays out as it does in any country where there's sectarian issues or divisiveness. It's a kind of revolving action-reaction and a bloody one.
And I think the moment as an Iraqi when ISIS came in June, The first nights there were, you know, many people were talking and the thinking in our heads that we expect that they come to our doors. Everywhere was no place safe, whether in the south or in Baghdad. Just we were thinking that it's like nightmare in the first weeks, especially in the first and the second week. People were, you know, thinking everywhere that it will be just like they continue to the south and they will take too, because they're targeting the mostly they announced this in their statements, the ISIS. They were trying to reach Karbala, which is the Shiite holy shrine, and Najaf.
South of Baghdad.
South of Baghdad.
For someone who just simply catches the latest news report out of Iraq, and even on a news source like NPR, which probably covers it more in depth than most others, what do you think would surprise them to know about day-to-day life in Baghdad or in other parts of Iraq? Ali?
Well, the situation in Iraq, we have been in this experience for, you know, more than a decade. So the things in Iraq, unpredictable. It's very hard, you know, because it's things very complicated with each other. It is ISIS, and has been mentioned, the sectarian. The sectarian is very high. And there have been very concerns since by the Sunni leaders about the complaint in Iraq, those, you know, the Shiite volunteers, that the groups from different Shiite parties and very strongly supported. They are not within the security, officially, with the security forces. So this, I think, maybe at the any time, this is the will bring back the sectarian to its peaks, like what happened in 2000. Why? Because the standing government now, the new government, Prime Minister Abadi government, there was a feeling among Iraqis that they were hoping, you know, to sort it out many things. But there have been massive, mistakes and the wrong policies by the former government of Mr. Maliki. So that this cannot be cleared in 1 year or 2 years or three. This will bring economic, social, sectarian, security. So they spend billions of dollars on the security forces, but at the end, in one night, more than 65,000 Iraqi security forces escaped from Mosul in 2 hours. In 2 hours, I met one of the soldiers, those who were escaped from Mosul. He said, I finished my duty. He's nearby my area I live in now. So he said, I see he's a young guy in 20s, and he said, I slept in Mosul. I just slept the night after I finished my duty around 11 o'clock, 11 p.m. He said, and 3 o'clock in the morning, a colleague of mine just asked me to wake up. I said, what happened? He told me, okay, you have just to change your civilian clothes. We have to escape. What happened? He said, I was trying to say, where are our leaders? Where are our commanders? So I'm just giving this an example to see how the situation in Iraq, this is very mysterious and unpredictable.
Mm-hmm. I think people would be surprised on a number of fronts. One, just how big of a challenge the government in Iraq faces. It's massive. It's deep-rooted. It basically goes into every single aspect of running the country, because it's actually the focus has to be correcting the mistakes of the past 10 plus years, institutional mistakes, and correcting that. I think another thing that people would be surprised about is just how close to the brink Iraq is. Iraq is in many different ways close to falling apart, breaking apart, falling apart, slipping away. And I think probably the most surprising, I don't know if that is even the right word, would be that under such, you know, long-term, seemingly hopeless prospects, you know, Iraqis get up in the morning just like we do. They go to school if the roads aren't blocked or there's not too much traffic to get there. At night, you'll see them at the ice cream shops. You'll see them at the restaurants. I don't want to American generalize life in Iraq, but there's a bit of reality still.
Or maybe the children go to the street
right
one day and they have American baseball.
Right. One day.
Ben, at the risk of sounding perhaps a little flip here, I mean, when you mentioned that Iraq is close to the brink, mm-hmm. what would going over the brink look like? Because to the outside now, Iraq looks like a country which is, in many ways, falling apart.
Sure.
If it gets there, I mean, what would be the things that we would see that would make things even worse than they are now?
The sectarianism actually becoming permanent. I don't think it is just yet, but the sectarian being permanent and the majority of the country saying Sunni Arabs are the enemy regardless. That's a recipe for a civil war, and that breaks the country apart. That becomes an act of war between two states. The Kurdish negotiations with the central government, it could lead to a big compromise. It could lead to a compromise that says, okay, we're going to agree to the terms of the divorce, as one Kurdish official told me.
Which would mean separate countries at that
point? Separate countries. However, what that would most likely lead to is a actual war over the disputed territories, over oil-rich territories, over Kirkuk and other territories that have sizable, if not majority, non-Kurdish populations. Or vice versa. If Baghdad stakes claims on areas that are majority Kurdish, that would lead to a civil war. If that happens, or if there's some measure of further Kurdish autonomy, economic oil autonomy, then the southern provinces say, hey, we actually produce even more oil than them. Why aren't we getting the same rights? We're going to declare our independent country or our autonomy, or somehow say that our desires for the benefits for our province should actually be the governing force behind, you know, a national government. And that's just an unsustainable way of governing a country.
Well, until ISIS came in June, that, many Iraqis, you know, patriotic, you know, nationals, and they say, well, we should stay one country from different parties, you know. Even the feeling among ordinary Iraqis like me and many educated people or non-educated. So they were saying, well, it's better to stay one country. We have a constitution. We have federalism. But to be honest, as an Iraqi, I'm not representing now every Iraqi, but just giving my view after the experience of ISIS in Iraq in June, that I was hearing this personally and in many people, friends, and there are a lot of also sounds against this, voices against this, but I heard many people say that if now the division to have separate regions, not regions, but separate countries, if let people live safely, that would be better for us. Better than, because as Ben just mentioned, that there is no mistrust. Mistrust not just between the Kurds and the central government, mistrust between the Shiite, the Sunnis, and the Kurds. Those the main functions of Iraq. They have no trust among themselves, and they don't want, in a way or another, I just don't want to be unfair, but I think that many people now say that if we live in separate regions, in separate states, it will be safer for everybody.
Gentlemen, thank you for your time.
Thank you.
You're very welcome. Thank you.
Ben Lando is the founder of the Iraq Oil Report. He's also a Western Michigan University graduate and Kalamazoo native. And we've also been joined by Ali, who is the Baghdad bureau chief for the Iraq Oil Report. Links with more information and longer versions of interviews on West Southwest can be found at wmuk.org. This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans.